Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Governor Sean Parnell gives an update on the legislative session and discusses his two major initiatives for Alaska, economic security and positioning Alaska families for success. Recorded at a Commonwealth North luncheon on Thursday, April 1st, Governor Sean Parnell is coming up next on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans after the news.
Good afternoon and welcome to this Commonwealth North briefing. I'm Joe Beadle, president of North Rim Bank, and more importantly today, president of the board of Commonwealth North. For our head table today, we have Governor Sean Parnell, Alaska's 10th governor, who will be our keynote speaker. We have Mort Plum, chief operating officer at First National Bank Alaska, a board member of Commonwealth North, and a personal sponsor of today's event. And we have Maggie Grega, University of Alaska Office of the Chancellor and member of Commonwealth North. On our table are question cards, and as you know, the protocol for Commonwealth North, you fill out your questions, you hold up the questions, and our CEO or Executive Director, Jim Egan, or Josh will come around and pick up those cards and bring them up to me for questions of our presenter. I am now pleased to welcome Governor Sean Parnell to the Commonwealth North podium. Governor Parnell was elected as Alaska's Lieutenant Governor in November of 2006 and became Alaska's 10th governor in July 2009. We're excited to hear about things going on in Juneau and about his two major initiatives for Alaska, economic certainty and positioning Alaska families for our success. Governor, our board and membership applaud you for your direct engagement with us and the access that you've provided us since becoming governor.
Good day. I just got off the plane from Juneau, so I am going to be happy to report we have 17 days left of the legislative session. And this is from a governor who's working pretty well with legislators, and we're all going to be happy when we're able to conclude business there. And I want to just take another opportunity. I don't often get the opportunity to give thanks to the Obama administration, but I do want to give credit where credit's due. Because yesterday, when the offshore leasing issues were announced, or when the decisions were made, I remained very concerned because on the in the Chukchi and the Beaufort, they said, yes, existing leases are okay, but we're gonna put off decision on 2012 to 2017. That causes problems when you don't have a consistent lease schedule, so companies don't know what leases to shed and where to allocate capital in the years ahead. And so everybody thought, oh great, existing leases are not touched. But what wasn't said is that was Interior saying it, while on the other hand, EPA was holding an air permit over one company's head. And we just got word today that EPA Region 10 has issued Shell a final air discharge permit for the Chukchi. So that's good news. It's been a lot of work on a lot of people's part, a lot of support from around our state on this and from our administration. Still some legal challenges ahead to deal with, both current and future, but this is another good sign that we may have some work going this summer offshore. Also, I was just really interested to see the resolution. Thank you, Joe, for this. And it just talks about how Commonwealth North urges the Alaska legislature and the governor to act now in 2010 to establish policy, amend laws, reform regulations to substantially incentivize investment and increase the competitiveness of Alaska. And it speaks specifically to oil and gas basins, but other businesses as well. And that's my primary topic today. 17 days left, and our administration's economic development package is in play all the way through the legislature. That package includes tax breaks for individual Alaskans. It includes tax credits and tax incentives for companies that invest here and create Alaska jobs. It includes a new microloan program for small businesses. It includes budget items like a deferred maintenance plan, like a building plan, like a roads to resources plan. All of these elements are in play right now in Juneau. It's all about working to create that climate for investment and creating jobs and ongoing jobs for the future. So tourism, let me talk about that, because you mentioned access, Joe. Yesterday, about 80 of our small businesses, tour operators, bed and breakfast owners, travel operators, came to Juneau to argue and work with legislators for help in their sector of the economy. Since I was elected, I have visited with hundreds of Alaskans in the tour industry. Most of us, and maybe I shouldn't say it this way, but it's easy. It's an easy campaign bumper sticker to think about taxing tourists. It's easy to tax cruise lines. We think in our head. But what that means is we're taxing Alaska businesses because we're making it more expensive for people to come here when in other markets they can go elsewhere. Not only the individuals, but the ships themselves. And so I came to see things more personally as I went into the businesses and spoke with these business owners. We've lost about 140,000 cruise line passengers this coming season who are spending money elsewhere and not here. So not only have I been speaking with these 80 Alaskans yesterday, who I visited with at the governor's house, and I've spoken with them since last August as their governor, but I also met with cruise line executives in Miami at SeaTrade, at the world's largest cruise line trade show. I heard two things from them. I heard reduce costs and increase marketing. That's what we need to do business in Alaska. And is it any wonder when for a $499 cruise, a seven-day cruise, they pay $61 in head taxes? $46.50 to the state, $4 for ocean rangers, and $15 if they go to Ketchikan and Juneau for local head taxes. So $61 out of $499, that's a head tax. Those are high costs. It's easier for a company to move a ship like that from our waters somewhere else when they're faced with those kinds of costs. So I did hear. I heard that Alaska's cost structure was too high. I heard that improved marketing was needed. And so what did I do about it? I came back to Juneau, and I had already supported a tourism marketing tax credit, a corporate income tax credit for contributions made to Alaska tourism marketing. I'd already supported that. So I have supported a head tax reduction to $34.50 with offsets as well for those local head taxes, so those tourists are not taxed twice for hitting Ketchikan and Juneau. I introduced legislation that married those two concepts together. It has both the tourism, the corporate income tax credit in it for marketing, as well as the head tax. All kinds of motivations at play in Juneau right now. Bottom line is they need to do the right thing. I believe they will do the right thing. I believe they will bring forward a sustainable mechanism to fund tourism marketing, and I believe that they will reduce the head tax and bring more tourists back to Alaska. So it's about Alaska jobs. It's about growing our economy. Oil. You mentioned that in your resolution. How are we going to incentivize more investment here? I put forward a bill that incentivizes infill drilling. If they invest in infill drilling, they get increased tax credits and new tax credits and accelerated depreciation as well, 1 year instead of 2 years to recover those costs. That bill has been heard three times now in the House Resources Committee. They've lost a member this week due to a family emergency. I'm told that that bill will be up again on Monday. So my hope is that we can get that bill moving forward. That will create jobs soon and new production soon, if allowed, because these are known fields. This is going to help Prudhoe, Kuparuk, any infill drilling that's on the shelf now. And you know, a key part of economic success here has to do with gaining access to our tremendous natural gas resources. This issue is of utmost importance. And you've heard a number of people speak to this topic, and so I want to be sure that I address it as well. I think we need to pursue all options to get gas to our people and to market. I will not set aside one path that companies are working on, that people are investing their time and resources in, just because I want to pick a project as the state governor. I don't think that's the way the private sector works. I don't think that's the way a free market works. I think we need to keep our options open. What I've said is that we are going to aggressively pursue two paths for our gas line: the Alaska Pipeline Project under the AGEA framework, and a smaller diameter pipe, frequently referred to as the bullet line effort. Now, Senator Ted Stevens, a man whom I have great respect for, he recently advocated here, I believe, that we stop the Alaska Pipeline Project under AGEA and choose an LNG project exporting gas to the Pacific Rim. I want to discuss with you today why I believe we are already pursuing the project that Senator Stevens described, and why we should not close down a path to Alaska jobs and economic growth. While the headlines regarding a large diameter gas pipeline to the North Slope have focused primarily on North American markets, specific steps were taken to ensure gas would flow to Tidewater in Valdez, if that is where buyers want to take deliveries. In fact, the winning TransCanada TC Alaska proposal in the AGEA process, which has now become the Alaska Pipeline Project, that was successful in part because it committed to design a pipe to Valdez where a liquefaction plant could be located to serve Pacific Rim markets, including China. The design work for this pipeline route has been done. Proposed shipping tariffs have been announced, and we are literally weeks away from the start of an open season. An open season that FERC just gave the green light to, and it was announced yesterday. An open season where prospective shippers will be able to bid on capacity to take up to 3 billion cubic feet a day of gas to Tidewater and Valdez, or potentially larger amounts overland to other North American markets. If either of these market options prove to be viable, we're going to see willing buyers and willing sellers show up in this open season. This is an important point I want to make, and I just want to repeat it. If companies want to propose shipping gas to Alaskans and through Canada to the lower 48, they can do it. If they want to propose an LNG export project out of Valdez, they can do that too under the Alaska Pipeline Project by showing up in the open season. Ultimately, the market decides where the gas will be sold and for how much. I fully support moving forward with the Alaska Pipeline Project. But now transitioning from that to the second path, that was the Alaska Pipeline Project path under AGEA. Transitioning from that to our in-state or bullet line path, that effort, recognizing that market forces have to come together to move a pipeline forward, I'm not placing all of our eggs in one basket. Under my direction, a team of seasoned pipeline engineers are designing a smaller diameter line that could also serve in-state residential and industrial demand. I've instructed this engineering team to determine the cost of a pipeline from Cook Inlet to potential resources, from interior basins to the foothills of the North Slope and to the North Slope itself. And just last week, this team presented an update on their work to a commercial group gathering that included potential sellers and buyers for North Slope gas. A lot of people are talking about pipelines. We actually are spending state money and have a project team working it at this moment. Now, this data will be of major interest to owners of gas on the North Slope and potential buyers looking to serve in-state residential or industrial demand, or even Pacific Rim markets. I've requested funds to continue this team's work. The House stripped those funds out of my budget. The Senate put them back in for this in-state and bullet line effort. There are also two bills. Speaker Chenault has a bill to move the effort over to the Alaska Railroad, and Senator McGuire has another bill that kind of codifies exactly what their intention was as a legislature, but leaves the effort in the governor's office, and those bills are working their way through. My view is that one of those bills will pass. And if they don't, then the legislature has the option to fund the in-state bullet line effort with the budget appropriation they've got in the Senate budget. Since the economies of scale on a smaller pipeline will not be as favorable as a larger pipe, the design work will allow market players to consider how a blend of different gas and gas liquids at various volumes might be structured to advance an economic package. I also support efforts to review financing options through which the state may assist these economics. And I'm reviewing past suggestions on how individual Alaskans could choose to invest in such a plan. As we aggressively pursue natural gas development on these two paths, my primary focus remains on Alaskans' need for energy and requirements for future state revenue as oil production declines. By simultaneously advancing these two paths, I intend to gain access to our tremendous natural gas resources in a way that encourages additional oil and gas exploration on the North Slope and other areas of the state. By accomplishing this, we're going to have the energy and the financial resources we need to grow our economy and secure the economic prosperity of our state. So, 17 days. Why do I come back to that? Because this is when work gets done. It's not that people weren't working before this. This is when stuff happens. This is when it's important for you to make sure your voices are heard in Juneau. So what I tell you to do is set your priorities. Make sure you've got one or two in mind. Don't ask for the kitchen sink, because this is the time when bills start to fall off the Christmas tree and the major initiatives remain. My major initiatives focus on economic development, economic growth, and you've heard about a number of them at this point. So it's true, I've set an ambitious economic agenda. I'm going to continue to aggressively pursue growth for our state and opportunity for our families. Thanks, I'm going to take some questions as well.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA with Governor Sean Parnell during this spring membership drive. Governor Parnell was recorded at a lunch hosted by Commonwealth North at the Hilton Anchorage on Thursday, April 1st. Following his speech, Governor Parnell responded to questions from audience members.
I'd like to start by saying that Commonwealth North will be sponsoring a gubernatorial debate, and this is not the setting for such an event, so I'll be looking at the questions as they come up. Governor, this is the governor's response. What is the state's plan to create investment and development of oil that is located on state lands as these reserves decline at 5-6% per year?
Actually, I addressed that question in part in my remarks. One is I've provided for tax credits and incentives for further development on state land. I've also funded the initial stages of that road to Umiak to open up access to state land for oil and gas development. So those are two concrete steps I've taken.
To study these questions, you're being quick in your answers. This is related to oil and gas because our royalty, 25% goes to the permanent fund. So this seems to apply to the question. We've studied the concept of the permanent fund and POMV, percentage of market value payout of the permanent fund. What kind of leadership have you taken to support the POMV payout?
I gave about a year of my life in 1999 to trying to figure out the kind of the permanent fund puzzle, and many of you will remember that. And frankly, right now, there is no need to change what's being done. I mean, yes, it would be better to invest the permanent fund as an endowment. At this point, I don't see the ability to do that, and I am spending time and resources on those things that are achievable, like oil and gas development, like fostering mining, like tourism, and the like.
You'll like this one. Federal intervention issue in general, Endangered Species Act, the beluga whale here in here in Cook Inlet, the polar bear on the North Slope, and if you had time, talk a little bit about Red Dog Mine.
Well, this is why I get my Democratic friends give me a hard time for taking on the federal government, because I have instructed our Attorney General that any time the federal government takes a step to list a species and they didn't follow their processes to do it, or enlarge critical habitat areas when they didn't follow their processes correctly, those actions diminish our job opportunities. And so I have taken steps to litigate Endangered Species Act listings and critical habitat designations. I've also directed on the mining side, there's a case in Nevada, and it would change the regulation of mill site activities and severely restrict our mining activities on federal claims if that moves forward. Now, in Nevada, you would think the state of Nevada would fight that, but they have there a governor of one party who supports taking action in that lawsuit to protect mill site activities to where they are rather than further restricting them, and he's got an attorney general of a different party who doesn't want to do that. So I have asked our attorney general to intervene along with some other states there to protect our interests on our mining claims. And when it comes to Red Dog, I just recently set it seems like I'm having to file comments with the federal government all the time. And that's exactly what I've just done with Red Dog and the EPA, I believe. So lots of activity on the federal front. In fact, if you've heard John Katz, our DC person, who I have great respect for as well, who has served, I believe I'm probably his eighth governor, who just is as straight a shooter as they come. He has said that our federal issues have risen to a higher degree and taken up more of my time as your governor and more of his time in the Washington, D.C. office than they ever have before. So he's seeing a new level of activity that we are having to fight here. That's something I'm going to continue to do as we promote our economic growth here. I'm trying to become a little more long-winded because he was complaining about my short answers. So.
Not as fast as you are, Governor. Could you elaborate on your idea for how individual Alaskans could invest in the pipeline? You mentioned something about that.
I did, and frankly, that's one of those constituent ideas that has been around for a while. It was debated and tossed around by Governor Murkowski when he was thinking, when he was working on negotiations with the producer companies. And so I can't elaborate on it beyond saying it's an idea that is being chewed around right now over how that might happen and whether it would be a good thing. So that's one of those options that we want to keep out there.
Could you address in the AGEA legislation or law how you would not violate the 500 MMBTU AGEA limit if there were opportunities to have export through South Central?
Because it would be part of that AGEA project. But I thought you were actually going to go to the bullet line side of things, because that's the other side of the equation. Our demand in this state is about 300 MCF a day statewide, so we're not in any danger there. And if it's part of the AGEA package, I don't necessarily see.
You are correct. It is regarding the bullet line.
That question was about the bullet line.
Yes.
Well, and that's what I was saying, was that the opportunities here for in-state delivery are at 300 MCF a day, and that's what I was speaking to, was that smaller diameter line being fed here. So that doesn't run afoul of the AGEA limitations you referenced.
This particular question goes to carbon emissions and natural gas as an advantage for the country and the transition to a clean energy future. What is your administration doing to use that with the Alaska delegation in moving energy climate legislation?
Well, first off, under climate legislation as it currently exists, gas is disadvantaged as to coal, and that's something that we'd like to flip. When it comes to carbon emissions, we're also we think natural gas is a cleaner substitute than true oil, but when it comes to producing natural gas, that produces their carbon emissions as well from production. So I'm very concerned about what cap and trade legislation might do when it comes to our own ability to develop our own gas. So we'll be watching that closely. That's something that John Katz is working for us in D.C.
This question goes to in-state processing, specifically Flint Hills and Flint Hills put risk of shutting down, and specifically the reliance on international air cargo fueling. And would you have some comments on what the administration is doing to support or to keep Flint Hills from closing?
The best thing we could do is find a cheaper energy source for them. Flint Hills has only two of its three towers working because that's the optimal level of production for them right now, given their energy costs, given the waste crude that they put back in the line, and given just the overall cost package. So that's part of what our in-state gas effort is designed to do, and to do fairly quickly. So that's one effort underway right there. The other thing I can tell you from my experience working some years back with DNR at the Division of Oil and Gas that Flint Hills had negotiated a royalty agreement with DNR at the time. When prices went up, Flint Hills' agreement wasn't so good for Flint Hills at the time. They didn't negotiate a good deal for Flint Hills at the time, and when they think that they can justify reopening that, then that's something that the state is always open to considering. That doesn't mean that I'm not trying to send a signal here. Everybody rush in with your royalty agreements, but DNR is set up to evaluate those kinds of requests.
This goes to tax certainty and your ability and willingness to negotiate with the producers on tax certainty. So it assumes that the open season is successful with a condition on tax certainty. And will the state be willing to provide a reasonable level of tax certainty?
And the answer is, of course. And here's where we stand now. AGEA provides 10 years of tax certainty. The state's already anteed up and said, here's our 10 years of tax certainty. Producers will say that's not enough. If you ask for 35 years, and I'm going to speak to some of my friends in the industry, if you ask for 35 or 40 years of tax certainty, you're going to run afoul of constitutional prohibitions. If you run up higher than 10, you're going to have to be fighting those as well, but it's a sliding scale of risk between 10 and 35 years. The issue is, though, I don't want to do this twice. I want to negotiate it once with one project. I don't want to be boomeranged from one producer to another producer to another producer. I've seen that happen before in the last set of negotiations. What we want to do is, as a state, you want to have a project come forward and negotiate it, not have three heads to negotiate with. That does not a successful project make, but an open season is designed to get us to that place where there's a project. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't support changing the gas tax regime this year, because I didn't want to do it this year and then next fall be in fiscal negotiations or have the producers request changes to the tax regime. Certainty, they're going to request, a change in the rates and the like as well if they request certainty. So that's been my thinking, is let's do this once if we're going to do it and if it's justified.
This is a corollary question dealing with ACE's progressivity tax, and the question is, why not address some of that progressivity this session?
And that's a good question. I mean, that's absolutely a great question. And when I looked at it and I made my own proposal, I didn't address progressivity, and I didn't address it for a few what I think are very good reasons, and they've quite frankly they've panned out and been demonstrated to be true. I'll just say it publicly. We have a legislature that cannot pass changes to progressivity. It has to do with the organizational structure. It has to do with blowing up organizations. You will not see a change to progressivity in this legislature. That I saw that going into this legislative session, and I said, what can we do to incentivize more jobs and more growth in this state? And I listened to the companies. I went to just about every company that I knew of that was doing business in this state, I went to and spoke with last fall multiple times. I incorporated their ideas into the package that I presented. It's worth approximately $350 million of value as we calculate it from the state side of things. And I got a call from one of the producer heads at the time who said, if your tax package passes, we will engage in infield drilling, produce new oil and new jobs for Alaskans, and we'll do it quickly. So it was a pat on the back for a good first step. But bottom line is, you've seen the progressivity piece already kind of fail in the legislative session. There's 17 days left. What can we get? We can get new jobs and new oil production if we're willing to pass legislation that incentivizes infill drilling. That's where we are. Thanks.
migrate to another subject for a couple of questions, and this deals with health. And there's several people in the room that helped create the health roundtable at Commonwealth North, and we've got a white paper on things to do with health. So the questions that came up here is, what is the administration doing in response to the federal legislation on health? Are you going to sue or join suits with other states? And what are we doing to work on Medicare primary care providers within the state?
I was reading a Wall Street Journal article, Wall Street Journal on the way here today, and I ripped this out because I thought, I bet Commonwealth North asked me about healthcare. No, but one of the fallouts from passage of the federal legislation are these write-downs of corporate earnings. When you've got AT&T that just announced they're taking $1 billion write-down, and then you've also got Deere & Company, a steel company, Prudential, Caterpillar, they're taking write-downs, significant write-downs of their earnings. This is going to cost us. I mean, this isn't just, you know, some balance sheet little trick. This is going to come back in higher rates and the like. So you asked the question, are we going to sue the federal government on this? I am concerned about the individual mandates. You get fined if you don't participate. I'm concerned about the mandates on the businesses and really forcing participation on businesses' part as well, no matter what the cost. Those equate, in my mind, to legal claims related to the Commerce Clause and 10th Amendment. Whether the federal government can impose these kinds of actions on us as citizens and on us as businesses, or whether those powers are really reserved to the states. I mean, that's the 10th Amendment argument. The federal government has never instituted a national mandatory auto insurance. They've never done a national mandatory helmet law for these reasons, that states do that, not the federal government. So I know those legal claims. I practiced law in this state for 13 of the last 22 years. I also know enough to go check with the lawyers before deeming myself, you know, an expert on it. I just know what the questions are to ask. So I went to the Attorney General, and I have asked him to look at it. I've asked him to pull together his team of experts and look at it. I've been in touch with attorneys general in other states as well, talking with them about the claims they've raised. And I know that our Department of Law is doing the same. As they work their way through 2,400 pages of legislation and evaluate it, I can tell you that if I have an opportunity to stand up for our individual freedom and for our growth as businesses in that way, I'm going to do it. Thanks.
There was a specific tag on for Medicare primary care in Alaska, a facility, I believe.
On that question? Yeah. And I've already said I'm supportive of that kind of a clinic here in Alaska. The legislature is wrangling over how much, what does it look like, how much state contribution, how much private sector contribution. I've said I'm open to that. It really depends on the entire package at this point in the last 17 days.
We move on to your scholarship.
Are we almost done?
No,
we got lots of time.
You know, you're going so quick that there'll be more questions coming up. We we keep you working until 1 o'clock. Yeah, but you are quick. So, in terms of the scholarship program, our board of Commonwealth North passed a resolution in support of your program, and we know it's struggling, and we know that there are options to work through the summer. Would you care to give us an update on the possibility of passage and some of your current ideas?
See, this is where I love it when people are headlines scream at you, you know, discouraging moment, because in the last 17 days of the legislature, that's when anything can happen. That's when things change on a half-hour basis in the Capitol, and sometimes for the good. So merit scholarships, where is it? We have a bill sitting in the House and a bill sitting in the Senate, both in the finance committees. The education committees of each House added a needs component to it as well. It's mostly merit, but they've also said that for 50% of the unmet financial need of a young person who is part of this. If they have qualified for the merit scholarship, they get additional dollars on top. So they've made that more expensive. I have worked, and I'm working now, to rein that back in. And there was talk in the newspaper yesterday about putting it off to summer. I'm not letting them do it. We're not going to put this off. We're going to take a vote on it, and we're going to make sure that our kids have an opportunity to earn their way to college or to a trade school here in the state. It's the only way our businesses are going to get graduates that can actually do the job they're hired for. It's the only way that they can compete in a global economy and compete from here in Alaska. It's the only piece the legislature has in its hands right now that really is transformative. We've spent the last 3 years pouring more and more and more money into the K-12 system, and we're producing the same thing. We are getting students who are being shortchanged, not because of teachers, not because they're not trying, but because the system is built against them. And I am working to provide an incentive for kids to earn their way forward. I think Alaska is ready for it. And I think if we stick with the merit concept that they are going to earn the right, it's not given to them, they're going to earn it. Every Alaskan has that opportunity, urban, rural. It will be transformative for the decades to come.
I was a little longer-winded on that one.
I liked it, yeah. This is another softball that you can spend a little more time on. I choose respect in the newspaper and the walking and your discussion about sexual assault and domestic violence. So what is your vision? It gets a little bit political, but that is an issue for our state.
No, it's a huge issue. Until you walk into the cybercrime unit down here and you look at what's being tracked for child porn in this town and around this state, until you ride along with an Anchorage police officer and see that 65 or 70% of their calls are domestic violence related, until we understand that six times the national average that our kids are being sexually assaulted, we are six times the national average. Until we understand what that's doing to us as a community and as a state, we are just going to keep eroding from the inside. Now, I said, let's choose the positive side of this. Let's raise awareness and let's choose respect, but let's do more than that. Let's set people free from this bondage. Let's tell people that there is no shame or guilt in what has happened to them. I come from a family where substance abuse was an issue on my grandfather's side. I also come from a family where my father, who many of you know, broke that cycle because he chose a different path and because he loved and respected my mom and me and my brother. I know it's possible for us to change. And after I saw 18 communities yesterday, we had probably 300 people marching in Juneau down the street raising awareness. You had several hundred people here in Anchorage and in other communities around the state. I dispatched our commissioners out to the communities from Gakona to Craig, all over the state, Dutch Harbor in Alaska, to raise awareness. We had 18 communities this year. I want to have 40 next year, just so that we give permission to each other to talk about this. I'd like to say that 35 years ago, if I'd gone to a party with my friend, I didn't have permission to take his keys from him when he had been drinking too much before I got into his car, but I do now, and you do now. And my prayer is that 35 years from now, that our kids and our grandkids won't consider this private, things that we don't talk about, that they will be encouraged to talk with their friends, listen to their friends, and be willing to get help for their friends so that we don't just consider this a private thing that we don't want to get into. Thank you.
This is KESKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Governor Sean Parnell. He was recorded at a luncheon hosted by Commonwealth North on April 1st, 2010. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.